Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast. I'm your co-host Alexander Gungaruzic, joined by Samuel Rowan, and we're back for episode 191. And things are continuing to heat up, and in fact this is a big one, because for the first time in 2024, gotta get used to saying that, the Vancouver Whitecaps are playing an official professional match, and of course it's a big one. It's CONCACAF Champions Cup action. They're playing the almighty Giants from Monterrey, and it is Tigres. It's going to be a huge clash over, of course, on Vancouver Island, which is a whole part to get adjusted to this whole weird start. It's early February, Whitecaps getting set to play a game not in their home field, etc., etc., but it's huge, of course. Kind of marking the start of what's going to be a busy professional season for the Whitecaps. Of course, you cross CPL. Heck, even if you go down from the professional ladder in League 1 BC, it's another big season. And it feels like that all kind of kickstarts around this, right? This first game kicking everything off. So it's obviously a huge deal. We're going to dive more into that in this episode, preview that. Of course, we'll likely be back with some more analysis of what's going to happen. But also since then, the Whitecaps have made some key signings, some key moves across the board. But before we dive into all this, especially the fact, again, I'm just so giddy about the fact that live soccer's return. I think it's my first game since December, which is wild to think. It's been like 2.5 months, 3 months gone, just like that. Sam, how's it going this week heading into this big milestone?
Doing really well, huh? Happy match week, everyone. I'm excited about this. You just mentioned it, man. The prospect of doing some post-match analysis on the show again, you know, not talking about theoretical situations, where the Whitecaps can make moves, where they could potentially finish in the standings. No, we're going to have a match with a scoreline, with talking points, with good performances, bad performances, everything in between. I'm really looking forward to it. I think the hype, the excitement has snuck up on me the last couple of days. I wasn't thinking about it too much, and now all of a sudden it's really hit me. So we're going to preview Tigres just a little bit, what they've been up to since League's Cup last year. Obviously, this is, I think, as far as CONCACAF Champions League opponents go, actually a reasonably familiar non-MLS foe for the Whitecaps now that they've seen them a couple times over the last, you know, 7-8 years. So there's that little sense of rivalry, that little sense of animosity there, which I think is fun. And as you mentioned, you know, we'll get you up to date on what we heard from Vanni Sartini and Brian White earlier today. We're kind of, you know, who's going to be fit, who's going to be ready to go. And then also a couple of young Canadians added to the organization, or sort of, you know, graduated from the academy program up into the next pro ranks. So that's exciting as well. And things are starting to take shape here. So man, can't wait to get into it. Can't wait to watch a match. We're recording this on Tuesday, so that'll be tomorrow night. Very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's always exciting to have just live matches. I don't know about you. That's the stuff I love, man. I just, at the end of the day, I like being at games. I love just watching games, just diving into it, the atmosphere, the crowd. I mean, I guess I'm a bit of a, again, I love live games. Just a random plug, if you have the Footballogy app, because I know a few of our listeners do, give me a follow on Footballogy. I'll follow all y'all back. I love just, you know, for those unfamiliar, it's an app where you can just track all the live games you go to. I know some of us have some fun with that. But yeah, like little things. Like for this year, this is my first time I'll be able to check in on Footballogy and get try to beat my I think the last 2 years I hit 54 games in both years. I want to get 55, just big hit over that wall. And I mean, this is game one of hopefully the many that will get me to that number. But yeah, no, just all all that to say, it's a live football match. And CONCACAF Champions Cup, again, I love this tournament, super underrated. Just it's continental competition, but just with this one has the right amount of chaos. Like I watch a lot of UEFA Champions League, men's and women's. I try to watch Libertadores and et cetera, but there's just something about the chaotic nature of the CONCACAF Champions Cup that just it seems to have add a special bit of edge to it. Some of the stories too that emerge. So yeah, I'm just really excited about this game in isolation. But yeah, let's just dive right into it. Like this Tigres matchup, it's huge. It really is huge. And I mean, we've kind of said it before, it's a tough matchup for the Whitecaps. Really, it's not ideal. There are many factors on it, but also at the same time, thinking about it yesterday, like this is something where for the Whitecaps, ultimately, where do I think they view themselves? They probably view themselves as a team that can borderline compete in this tournament, like in all ideal circumstances. And ultimately, if you're gonna win a tournament like this, you're gonna have to beat a team like Tigres at some point, right? And of course, you could say, well, you'd prefer not to have them in the first round, no doubt. But also, I guess on the other side, if there's a way to beat them now, like it would set up your tournament so nicely. And I guess that's the nice part of it. Of also, like we've mentioned in the past, there's some reasons for the Whitecaps to maybe go a bit easier at this. There's some injuries in their squad that are going to deny them of key players. A lot of these guys are early in the season. You don't want to risk injuries by running them into the ground, et cetera. You add in the fact you're not even able to play one of your games near home. The fact the second leg will be in a tough environment, all of that. For sure, no doubt. But at the same time, it's two legs of competitive soccer. It's games you want to win, games that will be huge for the Whitecaps' reputation as a club. Ultimately, if you kind of think about it, there are always going to be challenges like this in continental football, just because you're always balancing with playing league games. You're always playing in midweek. You have more travel. Like your squad depth is always going to be stretched in these sorts of cases. And this is a good chance for the Whitecaps to prove that their squad depth's in good shape, because that's something they pushed a lot last year. Like, yeah, this is one of the deeper teams that we've had in our history, let alone one of the most talented ones. So yeah, while it sucks to be missing an Adekugbe and Ahmed, guys who could really help you in these games. Heck, we don't know if Pedro Vite will be up to full speed. We'll have an update on him shortly. But also, you have a lot of guys who can step up across the board. You have more depth than ever. So also, I like the fact that this is still a good challenge. I think that's something that we need to remember, is that over the last few weeks, we've kind of been like, are there reasons why the Whitecaps should maybe take this with a little more caution than usual? Absolutely. Are there reasons for them to not risk things? Absolutely. But also at the same time, this is a good chance for them to prove a lot. And if they can get a win against Tigres, I think that could really set the tone for what the season could mean as well. So there's no reason why they also can't go full throttle with what they have.
Yeah, I think to build right off of that, the big tone of the matchday minus one presser earlier today was this: what a great opportunity. This is trial by fire, right? Okay, we like the work we did in Spain. We think we've done the right things during the preseason. This is a team everyone knows that the starts the last couple of years under Vanni Sartini have not been up to the standard they wanted it. Kind of like a boulder rolling down a hill. It took some time to build momentum as the season went on. Well, this Tigres match, really, whether you have success or whether you have some real challenges, this is like kicking that boulder violently down the hill. There's no option but to respond, right? Because Tigres is, simply put, one of the best teams in the continent at the moment. I mean, they've been a great team the last 10 years, but right now, I mean, they're absolutely rolling. They're undefeated in 2024. They only have two losses spanning all the way back to like mid late September of last year. And one of those was in the second leg of the Apertura finals, where they were down a man and things kind of got hectic at the end. But like, really, they've played elite football for, a really long stretch now. They made a couple of nice additions this window. I think, this is a team that can certainly challenge the rest of the season down in Mexico. So, yeah, it's a tremendous test. As we've kind of pointed out, not only you're right on this show, but in past week's episodes, this is a challenge I think the Whitecaps are, for the most part, up to if they're in the same kind of midseason form. It just becomes that much more challenging given the circumstances at the moment. But I think it's an opportunity to figure out where you're at in terms of your preparation. I mean, I look back too at the roster last year in League Cup, and you know, I think you had some things about that team that you probably look and think you're in a slightly better place at the moment. Had Javane Brown starting at the back. I think it seems like we're getting away from that at this point. Matias Laborda gaining confidence at the end of the season. A much better, much more confident defender than he was way back last summer. So I think you're a little bit more confident in that back line. And then, you know, something as well, I think was interesting looking back at that matchup is you had Seb Berhalter and Ryan Raposo in those wing back positions. It's funny that, you know, with Julian Gressel last year, with Richie Larea, Sam Adekubi, they didn't have any of those options available then. They don't have any of those options available now. But I think the tactics have changed a little bit where maybe they're less reliant on those wingback spots now than they were before. And I also think the pitch could play in on Wednesday. I mean, Starlights, that's not a super wide pitch. It's tight constraints. And for the style of match that the Whitecaps want to play, which I think is, you know, not, I don't want to say negative, but they're going to be pragmatic, I think. And they realize the longer they can string out this tie, the more pressure they can put on Tigres, the better. They don't want to go down a goal in the 30th minute, push all their chips into the middle of the table, go down two or three at the half, and then the cup ties over 45 minutes in, right? Like that's, Vanni Sartini talked about the maturity to see the longer picture, know that it's over the course of two legs, and understand how to keep yourself in it. And the Whitecaps, again, they want to get as much out of this, not only in terms of a result, but in terms of from a preseason preparation perspective and playing meaningful minutes all the way up to, you know, the 85th minute down in Mexico in a couple of weeks' time is, I think, a real emphasis for this team.
Yeah, no, I think it's important to mention. I'm very happy you mentioned the last Tigres game, because I was actually going to pick up a few points from that. I think that, like we mentioned, we used that Tigres game a lot last year as a kind of a measuring stick of this Whitecaps team. Like, oh, they went up against Tigres, and Tigres was pretty full strength, and they went toe-to-toe in an even game, only lost on penalties. It's important, like you mentioned, no Adekugbe, no Larea. They weren't signed yet. Gressel had just been traded. You look at the lineup, like it was Golden White up front. They'll probably start across this tie. It was Veselinovic, Blackman, and Brown. Veselinovic and Blackman will probably start. You know, we'll see who's the third to join them. Takoko was in goal. Kubas was holding it down with a Shop Vite pivot in front of him. You have to imagine there'll be a lot of Kubas. We'll see who the midfielders who end up joining him. If it's Berhalter and a bit of a more defensive double pivot, is Vite going to be fine? Because we know he's fit, but will he be tactically up to speed? All of that. Like you mentioned, Berhalter was playing wing back. You know, that's something, well, he won't have to do that this time around. Heck, you even look at the subs. Like, their four subs that game were Laborda, Cordova, Ali Ahmed, which of course he'll be missed, and then Russell Tybert. They had a shorter bench too than Tigres. It kind of shows they're just in the middle of the summer and working on shoring up some squad depth. So yeah, like the fact that they already gone toe-to-toe with Tigres with a shorthanded squad, and you're looking at the guys they're missing, it's not something they haven't done before. So I think this is something where genuinely, it's important to note that there's no reason why the Whitecaps can't do it again. If they've got similar scenarios and a lot of the guys that are in their squad have matured, have grown, you know, in the last six to 12 months as players and potential impact options, et cetera, right? I think, of course, it is worth noting that it's complete role reversal. Tigres at the time was, you know, in preseason form, getting ready for their season. Whitecaps was mid-season form, whereas now it's the opposite. But, you know, that's all, ultimately we'll have to see how, you know, how much of a difference that ends up making, because it can sometimes make a difference and sometimes That rust can be overplayed in the factor. We'll see if the Whitecaps' intense preseason, for example, helped make up for that rust factor. But yeah, no, I think it's important to remember that, okay, maybe this Whitecaps team will be in tough against Tigres, but I think the fact that they have just months ago they went up against a Tigres situation, like looking at that lineup, I'd expect a lot of the guys who saw the field in that game to start, right? Like we're looking at guys like Gignac leading the line, Rafael Carioca in midfield's been getting a lot of minutes, Samir at the back, Pizarro, Lainez, Guzman, like a lot of those guys will see the field too. So it's not as if they're playing a completely different Tigres side. Of course, it wasn't one that was in fully in form at the time, but I think it's something where I think that's an important discussion to have.
Yeah, there's going to be an element of familiarity there. Obviously, the pressing and the high intensity style too, like that's something that's just part and parcel of this Tigres squad. So, you know what to expect in that respect. And as something that was spoken about too in the presser today was the antics, the energy, just everything that Tigres brings to the table, right? I mean, especially with Guzman between the sticks, it's always entertaining. He's, marauding off his line, sweeping way up the pitch. The Whitecaps aren't unfamiliar with that. They know what they're going to get, and a lot of the players for Vancouver that started that match will be involved in this one. So, yeah, I think that they're as prepared as they can be in that regard, despite the other circumstances. I do think something that's interesting, we talk about Tigres specifically, is that they are starting to very, very slowly look a little bit different than they did before. You still have a lot of veterans on this team, Gignac, but he's not playing as many minutes anymore. I mean, this season, if you go back to Apertura and then the beginning of the Clausura here, Argentine striker Nicolas Ibáñez has been popping off. He just came off a brace against Pumas in their most recent match, and they've kind of been going back and forth between Gignac and Ibanez up front. So sometimes they play two up top like the Whitecaps. Sometimes they play usually when Gignac starts, they play him on his own. It just kind of depends on how they're going to set up. And then, I mean, for me, the other thing, Alex, was just the big swing they took in the transfer market, bringing in Juan Brunetta from Santos, who lit it up in the Apertura and is already on a goal and two assists through five matches with Tigres. Bringing in a 26-year-old, he's kind of like a winger attacking mid type. It's just that little bit of new energy, new creativity to infuse with these older guys. I mean, you talked about Carioca in the midfield, who just kind of marshals everything, controls the pace of the game. And then obviously with Gignac and Guzman, then back in goal, they have that spine and veteran leadership, but they're starting to infuse some really talented other creative and attacking pieces, and I think it's just the right mix to make them a really dangerous team. So yeah, Tigres is taking steps. I think to they're obviously not satisfied with losing in the final back in 2023. So they're hungry, just like the Whitecaps are hungry to take a step in the right direction in 2024.
Yeah, and I mean, Brunetta is a fascinating one. Diego Lainez is one where he's 23. He's played in La Liga. Of course, he didn't find his feet as much in Europe as he would have liked, and he ends up coming home, back home to Mexico. But that's still a big signing. They paid reportedly a 6 million euro plus fee to bring him in. It's a sign of intent to bring in a player at that age, like that. They also brought in Marcelo Flores. The Canadian dual national ultimately ended up choosing Mexico, formerly, of course, of Arsenal. He wasn't able to find his feet there. They brought him in at 19 last year for a fee of just under $1 million. Another one as well, Oziel Herrera, 22 years old from Atlas, who, Atlas has been one of the better teams in Liga MX over the last few years, winning a couple titles. They paid 7 million euros as well. Like, it just shows Tigres, they're investing a lot. And those are all, with Brunetta, four guys who are under 26. And if you remove Brunetta, those are all three guys under 23 that are paying good fees for to shore up the squad that has a lot of veterans, right? Like the likes of Guzman and Carioca and Gignac and all these guys that have put in a shift. Pizarro at the back, who's 33. Even Angulo he's been around for a long time. He's still only 26, but like you look at the most part, this core of this squad, it's very veteran heavy. But yeah, it's interesting to see that evolution, like you mentioned, looking at Tigres so far this year in both the Apertura and Clausura. They are still being, good old Tigres. They out XG their opponents by over 0.2 per game, so they're generating more dangerous chances. They hold a lot of possession, so they're a team that wants to hold on to the ball, that wants to go at you. Their positional attacks, like over one in every five of their positional attacks are turning into shots, and they average a lot of positional attacks per game. They're also very good on set pieces, which is important. It's something like almost one in three of every corner they have is turning into a shot, which is a very good rate. Typically, the average is around one in five, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, this Tigres team also, again, on top of the talent, they play good soccer. They really want the ball. They want to break you down. They want to, do those things. The Cap saw that in person. And also another factor, interestingly, like you mentioned, they've been experimenting with their shape. They've been primarily a 4-2-3-1, a 4-1-4-1 team, which pretty much similar formations, just depending if you have the 1-6 or the 2-6s. They've played those two formations for about 50% of their games, but it's worth noting in about three or four of their last games, they've been playing with the 5-3-2, which could be interesting from the Whitecaps perspective, because that'll take away a lot of width, and the Whitecaps like to, play a little lot more narrow, and get some width through the fullbacks and wingbacks. So it'll be interesting to see if Tigres tries to do that, maybe try to limit the effectiveness. Like a Raposo, for example, was very good in that first Tigres matchup coming in on, because it was, they're playing a back four in that game. He kept getting isolated against the fullback and created some good chances. Could have had a goal or two, under if maybe they play a back five to kind of try and neutralize some of that width that the Whitecaps will want to bring from their wing backs to compensate for their forward line being so central, right? Like, so the Whitecaps as well, they're playing a front three, and then Tigres playing two center backs. That just means naturally you need one of the fullbacks to tuck in and help, right? Or one of the six to drop to avoid, and that's where the width overload's kind of created. Whereas, well, if you're playing a 5-3-2, you can have the three center backs kind of line up with that Whitecaps front three. You can have the wing backs kind of neutralize the Whitecaps wing backs, and then I'll put a lot of emphasis on the Whitecaps to create from midfield. And if Vite isn't able to get on the pitch, if Gald's playing a little too high up the pitch, that might be a bit tougher for the Whitecaps. So I think that's interesting that shape could potentially line up a bit better than the back four did, just because the Whitecaps were able to get a lot of joy in wide areas against it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about as writing the written preview, thinking about the way Tigres has changed their shape, the width or lack thereof of this pitch, and the fact that the Whitecaps are missing a couple of those like transitional attacking midfield types in Vite potentially. Again, we're gonna have to see if he plays, but obviously Ali Ahmed being out, they don't necessarily have those guys that, if they're forced to create centrally. How is that going to look? I think what that does for me, Alex, is that puts a lot of emphasis on the two new veteran additions up front in Fafa Pico and Demir Krylak. Demir Krylak, potentially in particular, what is he going to be able to offer if your Raposos in wide areas are limited either because of pitch dimensions, because of the way Tigres plays? How do you find ways to create opportunities against this Tigres team? And I think that yeah, both Fafa and Demir could have to play a key role in that if the Whitecaps are to have some success. So in general, I feel like the as we kind of mentioned, Brian White and Ryan Gold in some form up front, that seems like a guarantee. I think in all likelihood you're getting Ranko in the middle and Blackman and Laborda flanking him at the back and Takaoka in goal. The question is, what do you do with that third forward role and what do you do throughout the midfield beyond and Andres Kubas? Those are the big questions. How do the rest of those players both help you tactically, but then also match up against what Tigres is going to throw at you?
Yeah, that's a good question. We can kind of look into it. Just for those unfamiliar, some of the updates: Sam Adekugbe remains out as he's dealing with a knee problem. They're hoping that he's back start of the season, so they're just going to save him. Smart move to go.
because he's been dealing with that since late last year. So it's been a bit of a reoccurring issue. Of course, Ali Ahmed had a sports hernia. Looks like he's recovered well from the surgery, but there's still 4 to 6 weeks of recovery. But it's great to see him doing some gym work already for the Whitecaps, looking explosive. But that's of course one where it's going to take time to get back to 100% and cleared for match action. And then lastly, Pedro Vite is back after it looked like Ecuador would make it to the final round of Olympic qualifying. They missed out by a point. Means he comes back early. He came back like 3 days ago. The only thing is, it remains to be seen if he starts. I think it's something where I wonder if maybe he gets pushed to start just because he does ultimately know this Whitecaps system pretty well. He know like he's in great match shape. I think that's the one bonus of him being off with international duty. He's played like five games already this year of competitive nature. So fitness shouldn't be an issue. And yeah, like we mentioned, if the Whitecaps are going to need a bit of a midfield transitional threat, having a Vite is huge, because I'm thinking now, if Vite isn't starting, all of a sudden I'm looking at options where maybe you ask a Pico or a Krylak to pair with White, and you play Gold a little deeper than we've been seeing, just to kind of make sure he doesn't kind of get swallowed up in Tigres playing that five and three and kind of getting compact and closing out space. Whereas if you can get Gold to drop a little deeper, it'll force Tigres out of that shape a bit more. Whereas if you have a Vite to do that, it helps. It allows Gault to maybe get more of a free roll, just because you can trust Vite to do some of those creative things, like draw one of the Tigres three in midfield up, or I'm sure it'll even look like a 5-4-1 off the ball or something like that. And whereas if Vite is out, all of a sudden I think you're getting a little creative. Maybe you're also looking at like a Levante Johnson on that, a right wing back to pair with the Raposo to kind of for width purposes against that 5-3-2. So definitely I think the big question mark will be Vite starting, because I think he would offer a lot of plus. He played great against Tigres in the summer. I think his profile would be very needed in this game. But if he can't start, all of a sudden it creates a bit of a ripple down effect on the lineup, I'd say.
Man, I mean, I would love nothing more than Pedro to get a start. I think just when I look at things and sort of map them out, right? I think Pedro flew back into Vancouver on Friday. How many training sessions is that? One, maybe
I
two
think it's
pre-match?
four, because I guess they
Did
started Saturday.
they do all weekend? But like, I don't, both in terms of just like the travel, he has played, he played reasonably heavy minutes, getting on page with everyone tactically. I think it's one of those ones where you'd love it to be plug and play, but I just wonder if it's that simple. And I have to feel like Vanni Sartini has been working on some stuff, whatever it happens to be, without Pedro Vite while he's been away. And that's probably the sans Pedro Vite plan is probably the one they're most confident in, most drilled in. For this upcoming Wednesday. So I think that's just where my mind goes, is that as much as he might feel ready to go, it might be possible, is that really where the coaching staff is the most confident going into this one?
Yeah, and I guess that's the big question, right? Of yeah, how much they're willing to lean on him. I guess at the very least, maybe they end up going wait and see. Like maybe he just comes in at halftime if the game really needs a destabilizer. Maybe just because that's a nice thing with Pedro Vite, you can kind of task him to do different roles.
Vanny did say today, this is a match that will command 16 performances, not 11. So he was very strong in the idea that, listen, at this stage in the season, we're going to be using our bench to kind of throw everything we can at Tigres. So I think, whether it's a Krylak off the bench, someone like Pedro Vite, I think you're gonna, someone like a Levante Johnson, as you mentioned, Ryan Raposo, if he doesn't start, these are guys that Vanny's gonna throw at this Tigres team at some point in this match. And like you said, I wouldn't be surprised if you see some halftime subs if necessary, but certainly some 55th minute subs to really throw a curveball.
Oh yeah, a lot of Pico as well with his legs, either as a starter, or off the bench. But yeah, it's gonna be a good tactical matchup, and I like that. Especially, yeah, it's important to note for those maybe unfamiliar with Starlight, it is a bit smaller than usual. Of course, it is regulation. It wouldn't be CONCACAF approved if not, but naturally, like we're used to watching, say, Whitecaps games at BC Place. very wide pitch, very wide, you know, one of the widest in the country, probably only after Winnipeg and out in Hamilton there, Tim Hortons Field. Those are two very wide venues. Starlight's a lot smaller. You can just feel it. Having been to a lot of games there myself, like it makes a huge difference just in terms of teams not having you know, it's harder to get games stretched out there just because if you can get a good defensive shape, you know, with those smaller dimensions. So I think that's just important to note with the Tigres. I think that will really play into Tigres' hands. So we did see last year at BC Place, the game did get stretched a bit at times to the Whitecaps' favor, especially I remember when Sergio Cordova came on. He had some good looks, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm remembering this correctly, not mixing it up with the Leon game. Whereas I think maybe against this on this pitch, the smaller pitch might benefit, especially I'm thinking like a Gignac, for example, who might not run as much. It'll be nice that the ball from out the back can be pumped to him a little easier, that he won't have to be making as many long, you know, runs to get to where he likes to be on the pitch. So I think that is an important factor to consider as well when it comes to both teams setting up. Because yeah, I think a 5-4-1 from Tigres would be a lot more destabilizing on this Starlight pitch than maybe on a BC Place pitch, where you know, there is still width to find even when a team sets up in a 5-4-1. Because yeah, I remember like 2021 playoffs or 22 playoffs, I think it was, when Atlético Ottawa came to Pacific FC, played a 5-4-1, and just frustrated the heck out of Pacific because of the space that can take away. So yeah, that's very interesting as well to mention these factors. Because lastly, I think, yeah, like the fact too that you have to remember is there's two legs. That was one thing with Leagues Cup. It was one game. The Whitecaps were at home. They could kind of go for it a bit more. It is also worth noting that with the two legs, you have to be very careful because Tigres, there is still away goals in CONCACAF, if I'm not mistaken. So if you Tigres gets an away goal, that's a huge punch because that means essentially means you're going to have to either score two goals at home or you're going to have to get one on the road, which. If you want to know one thing about going to the Volcan where Tigres play, that's not an easy environment to play at. You can ask many teams who have gone there, the Whitecaps included. So yeah, I'd have confident that if you do what you need to do at home, you could go there and play for a nil-nil, maybe play for a 1-1, but you definitely don't want to be heading to the Volcan needing like a 2-0 result, right? Like you want to make sure you keep things tight at home just so you can even go to the Volcan and be very tight. I'd have to check. If I'm not mistaken, Orlando City, they played Tigres last year. I watched the games. I think the first leg at the Volcan, it was nil-nil. So again, I think there is this Tigres team is a lot more vulnerable than they used to be a few years ago, just with a lot of their squad aging. You could go to the Volcan and maybe scrap grind out a draw, but that'll rely on the Whitecaps being compact at home, not getting too opened up, and you know, not letting a Gignac get one or two, because all of a sudden a 1-1 result at home could be just as bad, knowing that okay, you need to go to the Volcan and score a goal.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Okay, last thing for me in terms of lineup decisions and sort of player roles in this one for Vancouver. And I'll throw this as an open question to you because I'm not sure I've entirely made up my mind or figured this out yet. But in terms of kind of like rounding out the midfield, if Alessandro Schopf and Seb Berhalter have roles to play in this match, what exactly do those look like? Because I think the most curious thing for me throughout the preseason is, you know, whether it's a diamond in midfield, whatever shape they end up playing in this new adapted system, it seems like a Berhalter, a Schopf, their roles are not entirely clear. So maybe we can kind of transition this into projected lineup for this one, but how do you see those guys fitting into this squad? Maybe, you know, not only long term, but in this matchup specifically.
Yeah, I think for Schopf, Berhalter, from Berhalter, you just kind of expect him to go in and muck up the midfield a lot defensively. He showed so much growth last year on that side of his game, right? Like little things, fouls, disrupting, just being more of a defensive presence. And of course, on the ball, he brings a lot of, you know, that ability to play that big switch, that big ball in behind, very good passer of the ball. And then with Schopf, as we've seen, he's at his best when he's playing a bit of a just transitional piece, like someone who kind of links different lines together. He's not going to be playing the huge 40-yarders or making the huge runs, but if he can just find the good pockets and connect everything together, there could maybe be some sort of value in, yeah, like a Kubas Berhalter pivot. I think that's kind of a good duo we've seen a lot of okay, you're going to get two guys all muck things up defensively, and you got guys who can play it forward. But if you're throwing Schopf into that equation, you wonder if maybe you see something where Kubas is kind of underneath, maybe Berhalter and Schopf playing a bit more as eights, with Berhalter being a bit tasked more defensively, Schopf being tasked a bit more in the build-up play. But yeah, I'd be interested to see if we see a trio of them together, just because it is something stylistically it doesn't fully mesh. Like I think for a Schopf, you might pair better with an Ahmed or a Vite who can get a bit more in behind, threaten their dribble and in their running. Whereas Berhalter, I think his best actions offensively come from him being on the ball. It is something where I'd be surprised to see all three of them together, but maybe you do something where you just go Berhalter, Kubas, Schopf, you muck up the midfield, and then you ask your Raposo, and maybe again at wing back you get a Johnson, maybe you get a Pico even at wing back, a bit unconventional, just to kind of stretch out the field and give some targets for those guys to play passes to. So I don't know if I'll fully see a Schopf, Berhalter, Kubas midfield personally, but if it were, I would see it maybe being more of a defensive compact posture versus what we saw last year at times, which is like, Ahmed, Vite, Kubas. It's a lot more stretch. It's a lot more going forward offensively.
Yeah, I guess that was just my thought, is that the all three of those players, or specifically Schopf and Berhalter in particular, have a unique skill set to provide. But to see the three of them together, especially in this current system, I kind of have a hard time imagining how that's going to work. So that leads to, yeah, someone like a Pico or a Levante Johnson in a wide role, or kicking Berhalter out to that wide role and playing Schopf centrally. Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Again, Demir Krylak, does he have a role as a starter? I don't know. It's going to be interesting, that kind of, that attacking part of the midfield, transitioning things from the halfway line to in and around the box. Who's going to do some of that work, sort of marshaling the ball forward for the Whitecaps when they get those opportunities. I'm excited to see some of that, kind of live bullets, so to speak, how the Whitecaps handle it. Obviously, they don't have, Ali Ahmed's one of those guys you think is going to be a massive part of that midfield picture for the Whitecaps this season. But if they want to test their depth, this is a time to figure out what they are able to do.
Yeah, exactly, right? Just this is the time, yeah, to experiment with some of those things, potentially get a new look across the board. But I guess maybe on that theme of so many lineup decisions, Sam, do you want to just give a shot at a projected lineup that we could see for this game? I mean, I guess I'll throw it to you to start with the important question. But first off, I guess we assume it'll kind of be like one of those where we've seen a lot lately, where it's like a 3-5-2 in possession, but then maybe it's like a bit of a 4-4-3-2-1 off the ball kind of thing, right? Where you get one of the fullbacks to drop, and you kind of get that flat four. Or do you think Vanny will go for a 3-5-2 on and off the ball, where it kind of turns into a five?
It's a really good question. I think against Tigres, potentially more something of the five at the back variety, and I feel like that's the way this team seems to be trending in general. So also, looking at this match again, just bringing up the thing I did about the midfield, like I'm kind of having a hard time figuring out the right combination in there. So I'll go from goal to up front. Yoey Takaoka, I think no news is good news on that front. There's been no discussion over the course of the offseason. It's just a straightforward thing for Takaoka. He's the guy. You don't really have to worry about the rest. So I think that's good for Vancouver. And then that back three, you look at the back end of last season, as I was doing earlier today, when Laborda, Blackman, and Veselinovic played together right at the end of last season, they had some really solid performances. I remember Axel Schuster talking about it with exit interviews at the end of 2023, that Matias said to him, like, "Man, I wish the season was starting just now," because he was so happy with the way he progressed, and he was finally feeling comfortable in the league, comfortable with the team. So I hope that for Laborda, that's a real jumping off point going into this season. So I think those three at the back, you want to try to build something there and then mix Bjorn into it or find his role as time goes on. But there probably hasn't been enough time to do that at the moment. So I think you stick with what you know. Kubas in the midfield, I think, is like a no-brainer. I also think Seb Berhalter in this kind of match, you find a role for him. And given the lack of depth at the moment, you're going to have to look at something like that. And I think it might end up being Berhalter and Raposo in those wide-ish roles, because Berhalter has the tactical flexibility. Raposo, as you mentioned, had success against Tigres last season. And then the question is up front, who do you mix in? I have at the moment, a very unstructured front four of Krylak, Pico, Gold, and White. Just throw them all out there together, see what happens. So I think you can have Krylak drop back in. You know, you can have Berhalter and Raposo form that back five if you want, and then you kind of defend in a three, or a, what is it? It's a 5-3-2 basically. I think you're going to see a lot of different things from Vanni Sartini in this match. I think whether it comes to subs, shape, both on and off the ball, I think it's going to be mad scientist tinkering, because I feel like they haven't fully discovered their final form just yet. So I think we'll see a little bit of everything. But curious for your thoughts.
Yeah, I'd agree mostly across the board. I think we'll see Takoka in goal. I think we'll see pretty straightforward Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman from right to left. Just keep it simple. We haven't seen enough of Inge Utvik yet to, you know, potentially consider him starting in that middle to bring a bit of that aerial presence that he was signed for. So of course
I would say, you mentioned it, watch out for those set pieces, especially with it sounds like Tigres has a very good rate. So that's something, you know, I think a big thing for me, sorry for interrupting, but is Yohei Takaoka, has he improved? Has he evolved in terms of his aerial presence? I think that's like a massive key for this team this season, is he able to take that step? So a great first test for him in that regard.
Yeah, and that goes for the rest of the back three. Maybe they worked on some things where we see them mark a man-to-man a little more versus, you know, being always in zone or little things, especially just, I say that because I mean, we know Vanny is very committed to a zone setup, but you're playing Gignac, and I think Gignac scored off a wide ball last time he played you. So you don't, you just don't want Gignac to have a field day against a team that struggles in the air. So we'll see how that lines up. But I'd expect Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman. That's where things get interesting, though, I think, after that, because I think you could also, based, you know, just on the setup, I think you could see a Luis Martins. I don't know if I'd go for that, but I think you could see him and Raposo as full as wingbacks.
It's what we saw in the last preseason game, right? So that could be the thing.
That's why I'm wondering, like, going on based on what this formation, what they set up, maybe they go for Martins and Raposo, just have two more natural fullbacks versus like a Berhalter, and then just go like Kubas and Berhalter to muck things up. And then you can go like a Gold and White, and then either you choose to go shop with your third midfielder and really muck things up, or you go for like a Krylak from more of a connector, or you go Pico up front. That's kind of one thing I could see. Of course, it's like, I just named like 14 players, but I just kind of giving you the scenarios where I could see tweaks. And if not, I could also see, like you mentioned, a Berhalter, Raposo wingbacks. In that case, you'd see Kubas, Schopf, and then you'd probably see some sort of Gold, White, I think, Krylak or Pico situation. So I think the starters we can nail down are probably our Gold, White, Raposo, Kubas, and then the back three. It's just a question of, and even Berhalter, I feel like we can nail down. It's just, we can't really tell if he's going to be a wingback or a midfielder. So it's going to be interesting to see who kind of wins those tweener battles. Like, is it going to be Martins as the other wingback? Is it going to be Schopf being able to slide in if Berhalter goes to wingback? Is between Krylak and Pico, who's going to start? Or is it both?
because it feels like we're going to get one of them, maybe not both, but unless we see a Berhalter go to wing back. So I think those are kind of the question areas that I'd be looking at, that I could see some variance.
And I think what we know for sure is whoever of those we just listed don't see the team sheet as starters, they will be your impact players off the bench, right? That's the way this thing is setting up. So you have that flexibility to, again, kind of like I mentioned, I think you have plan A. You trot out your starters with certain tactical ideas in mind, but you also have two or three subs ready to come on to completely change up the shape if you feel like, hey, we need to bob and weave here and do something different. Because again, I think you mentioned it in terms of the away goals, the difficult environment. If they can make this if they can make this a nil-nil, that's kind of like the dream scenario, right? It's not your attractive football, but a tie with no away goals conceded, that's pretty much your dream result. Obviously, you'd like to, you'd love to smash it 4-2 and get the cushion, but I think you have to be realistic as well. And I think the Whitecaps will be cautious and pragmatic about this one, which I know is difficult for Vanni Sartini to do, but I think he's going to try his best in this one.
Yeah, well, especially if you can get a 1-0 even in this game and then just go for a 0-0 Volcan. Of course, it's a lot to ask of the Whitecaps, but I don't know. I just found it very interesting that Orlando last year, like I watched that tie mostly because Luca Petrasso was playing, and like it was just, I was very impressed with Orlando's resolve of just being committed and staying organized and doing what they did at the Volcan. And I feel like just a lot more games in recent years just at the Volcan don't feel like, again, between 2015 and 2019 playing at the Volcan, it was just like, yeah, a good chance. Like, remember the Whitecaps when they played there, they got the doors blown off them in 2016 or whatever it was, 2017, and they barely got out of there with a 2-0 deficit. So I think it again it's something where it's a huge ask, but especially as the defensive quality of MLS teams improve, it's something where it's not as far-fetched to go out and try to grind out a result in the Volcan. But that, of course, doesn't matter if you're heading there down 3-0 or something like that, which is very much a possibility. This is a good Tigres team that can score, that can create chances. I think it's important to preface that this isn't a discount of Tigres. It's just more looking at, if you're going to tell me I'm putting money on it, if the Whitecaps are to advance, I'd likely put it as they got a job done and got out 2-1 or 1-0 across two legs. I'm not saying this is one of those ties where they got out because it's a 5-5 shootout they won on away goals. This isn't the kind of team that they're going to get very far, it feels like, if they get in that approach with the current lineup they have. I think with everyone fully healthy, all their signings made, this is a Whitecaps team that, as we saw last year, can generate chances and score goals with the best of them. But with some guys injured, some of those guys fully not up to speed, it isn't time to maybe go to that notch in the tool belt where it's like heavy metal. You kind of maybe have to go for a bit more of a cautious, a safer build.
Yeah. So at least for me in written form already, I've gone for a 2-1 Tigres result. Ultimately, I think the Whitecaps will play for that kind of, 1-0, 0-0, 1-1 type of match. And maybe, sneaky Gignac is just a bit too much to handle for this Whitecaps team at the moment. Again, I would love for, what would be fantastic is if the Whitecaps saw Tigres again in League's Cup mid-season, and then we get to see what this matchup looks like later on in the year as well. Because I like this rivalry. I think the Whitecaps, they stand a chance here in the next 5 years of beating a team like this. And as you said, doing so in sort of convincing or entertaining fashion, I think that's a possibility. I just don't know if they're quite there yet. Certainly not at this stage in the year with the way things are at the moment.
Yeah, that's it. It's a huge ask, right? So we'll just see how it lines up. If I were to predict, I'd say 1-0 Tigres. I'm debating the 1-1, but we'll see if the way, because it is, again, this is still a galled white team. You can imagine them linking up. They get a 1-1, but I'll just
They are match breakers at times, but I also think that Tigres will, kind of like teams in the near the playoffs last year, everyone knows now that white and gold is the thing you have to stop, right? Like it's the number one thing on the bulletin board every week you're playing the Whitecaps. So I'm curious to see how they respond this year, because teams started to throw some new stuff at them, and obviously Tigres is going to have some tricks up their sleeve as well.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see what the new addition of Gold and White is. Like, I think, for example, for Gold right off the bat, I'd like to see him shoot more. He's got quality shooting ability, and he's such a good passer, and he's always going to be looking pass first, and that's why he's so dangerous that everyone knows he's going to pass, and he's still threading these passes. But also, I think he's got some shooting quality that could really, make him unpredictable, be a bit more dangerous in open play, because ultimately a lot of his goals last year did come off, penalties. So there are still additions to their game that they can have. And of course, with White, he's, it feels like he still has some more areas to sharpen in his game. First of all, like, even just little things like consistent with his finishing across the whole year. Of course, we saw him get hot at the end of last year, but we imagine if he put away some of those big chances he was getting earlier in the year, he could have won the Gold Boot. And then, of course, maybe we see White take advantage of a shoot heavier Gold, and maybe we see White kind of draw in a bit more defenders and try to open up space for Gold, because everyone just naturally assumes that the pattern always is going to be Gold setting up White, whereas I think there's some more potential for them to kind of throw the inverse at teams, right? Try to get Gold a bit more involved in the shooting and the offensive load. And that would just, that's just going to add another dimension to things. But I guess that's pretty much it for previewing the game. I guess some other notes, of course, again, as mentioned, Starlight Stadium is the game. So just remember that for whatever reason. If you forgot and you're planning on heading to BC Place, it is indeed Starlight Stadium, Langford, 7 p.m. Pacific kick. The game will be broadcast on One Soccer, who announced today that they've retained a lot of the CONCACAF rights for the next few months. So just for those who are kind of wondering, will it be YouTube? Will it be One Soccer? It will be on One Soccer. So if, gives you plenty of time to get set up and make sure you have that all, the functionality. Of course, that means it's also on Fubo. If you have Telus app, it's all on there. So just so that you're looking in the right place for the game. So I think that's huge development, just to be able to know that heading into the game, that there's not this kind of question of YouTube, VPN. No, it's on One Soccer, and make sure to tune in, I guess, if you're not able to get out to the game, because it still should be a very good matchup. And heck, there's a lot of other good CONCACAF Champions Cup games, like Forge Place Chivas in what should be a very good tie earlier that day. So if you have some time to kill, you can always throw on One Soccer and get that watching.
Yeah, I would encourage you to show up a little bit early to broadcast and check out some of Forge and Chivas. That's going to be awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Almost kind of, was buried in the lead up to Whitecap stuff. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. It's going to be a great match. Shout out to anyone who's, on the ferry at the moment, maybe listening to this podcast, headed over to the island. Had some people on Twitter and stuff saying that they're heading over and they can't wait. So that's great that I was worried, man. It's, going to be really difficult for people to make the trip, but some people are finding time in their busy schedules to do that. So good on you. And great that it's available in a predictable, consistent format. You don't have to go hunting for a dodgy stream just yet. And yeah, a reminder that if you are outside the country, that YouTube, CONCACAF does do a pretty good job in those without those nations without a rights deal. So there's always a way to find it. But here in Canada, easy to get on One Soccer, and good to see there's a little bit of stability for the time being. All right. Well, speaking of some stability, speaking of, some things kind of moving in the right direction, the Whitecaps, it's not some crazy high valued acquisition, but they're able to secure the services of two domestic players, one homegrown. Bilal Halbouni signs a 2-year contract with 1-year option with the first team, which I think is interesting because some might have thought this would have been a next pro deal. He comes in with a decent amount of pedigree at a position of need for the Whitecaps. Obviously, this is a vote of confidence that Vanni Sartini, Axel Schuster, the whole kind of performance staff was encouraged with what they saw in Spain. And ultimately, this is kind of what we were talking about, Alex. Bring in, an international free agent from a league with a good profile, a good record, and then bring in someone who's a bit more of a long-term project, someone who's not going to cost too much, fills a domestic roster spot, but has some serious upside. I think I really like these center back additions for Vancouver. I'm assuming that Haubuni will get significant minutes with the second team, but I don't know. Maybe he's ready for first team minutes quicker than we might expect. A guy I could see featuring reasonably prominently in the early rounds of the Canadian Championship. And just overall, I think we were chatting about this recently that, you know, the next pro team this season, which we'll kind of talk about a little bit with the next guy, could be really fun to watch. A nice combination of domestic talent, youth, some international signings. And I think this just continues this trend of making some shrewd, kind of like reasonably decent floor, but also high ceiling bets on guys that don't put you in, you know, weird contractual positions, right? You're not committed to a 25-year-old international who's just coming out of like his 6 year of college eligibility. I like these kinds of bets more.
Yeah, and I think the Haubuni one, there's a lot to like. He's only 24, first off. And what's important to note with him is that he has so much potential to unearth. He's only played 36 games in his career, and I think he hasn't played yet at a first team level. Mainly that's just because of injuries. He was obviously at Werder Bremen. He was doing great things for their second team. He was training with Werder Bremen's first team when they're in the Bundesliga. Like, this was something where he was like 21 at the time, I think it was 2021. But just couldn't break through. It's Werder Bremen. It's a Bundesliga team. No shame in that. He goes to Magdeburg in the second division. That was very intriguing. Scott Kennedy made a huge reputation for himself in that tier as a center back. He joins Magdeburg. You know, they kind of ease him in slowly. Then he blows out his knee, making his Serie A debut unofficially, of course. So he's still actually Canadian eligible because his Serie A debut was in a friendly. If I'm not mistaken, as well, it was against like Jordan. Well, I just mentioned that because Jordan beat obviously South Korea today to make the Asian Cup final. So fun story linked to that. But yeah, he made his debut for Serie A, blew out his knee, was out for almost a year. So it's something where there's so much potential just because he hasn't really made a first team debut yet. So I think that'll be huge for him to kind of get that opportunity because he's shown so much promise, like to training with Werder Bremen's first team, making that move to a second division Bundesliga club, which is a very good level. We've seen MLS teams actually in the past have good success signing guys who play in the second Bundesliga. It's a league that translates well to MLS. And then, yeah, it's still only 24. I think that's the important thing to note in all this. Someone mentioned kind of, I saw on Twitter, I thought it was a bit of a fun comparison. There's kind of reminiscences of some Derek Cornelius style upside, because also a fun thing with Haubuni, I had the chance to interview him about 2 years ago when he made the move to Magdeburg. He played CDM at League One Ontario. Up until like his final year there, halfway through the year, his coach like, you want to try center back? And he's like, fine, I'll just play center back. And he ended up being a hit, and he was so good that he got this move to Werder Bremen within like 6 months of him discovering the position in League One Ontario. So he's very good on the ball because of that. He's a number six profile naturally, or even he was saying he played as a 10 also at times. Like, he's a very good on the ball, but he's also dangerous in the box, in the air, offensively off set pieces, and he has a lot of those attributes that you'd want out of a center back. So we'll be interested to see how his recovery goes. I think you're hearing all those attributes that scream the white cap center back, right? Someone's good on the ball. You want someone who can be dangerous on set pieces. Good.
I was going to say the number 10 playing center back sounds like Vanni Sartini's dream.
Oh, exactly it. So I wonder if maybe Haubuni slipped that in their kind of informal chats. Like, oh yeah, Vanni, I used to play number 10, and Vanny's eyes just lit up like, he played what? And so that's probably a big reason why I imagine he impressed Vanny a lot in preseason. He has those good on-ball qualities. So yeah, I think it's a good signing in the sense that, yeah, he's still young. And like you mentioned, he can maybe find his feet at the second team, get used to the Whitecaps way, get used to just getting minutes under his belt after not playing that much over the last few years with injuries. And, you know, the fact that he was in the system of good clubs. And like you mentioned, if things don't go well, he's probably not going to cost a lot. But these are the sort of young domestic punts you want to be taking.
I was very intrigued with this deal, especially that you look at it's in Inge Utvik, it's Veselinovic, it's Black, when it's Laborde, all those guys are going to expect to eat the minute. So this for Halbouni, it feels there's a little more room for him to find his feet with the second team and then work his way up to the first team. I just say that because, you know, we might think, oh yeah, well, last year we sang a lot of the same things about Kerifeayao, and I just want to throw that out. Kerifeayao had come off two very good CPL seasons. He was on an upward trend. He was getting minutes. You come in, he doesn't play, it derails that. Whereas what I like with this Halbouni one is he's coming off that injury. He hasn't had that chance to get that many minutes under his belt. So for the Whitecaps, there's no rush to give him minutes where you end up in a situation where after a year you're like, okay, maybe we halted his growth a little bit. And I think that upside project where it can genuinely be a reclamation, I think it's important to factor that is a bit of a different entity to consider in this, you know, Halbouni as a depth signing versus like a Yao last year, who was of course a bit younger, but similar positions and similar profiles.
Yeah, I was going to bring up Yao if you didn't, because yeah, it's, you know, you can get a bit gun shy now because you've heard the same things before and it didn't work out. But again, thinking back to what Axel Schuster said right at the end of last season, in terms of some players that were maybe going to move on, you know, guys like a Cam Habibullah, someone like Thomas Hasall, where it's not just about is it a good player? You know, is the guy a fit for the organization in terms of like the position, the style of play? It's also, is the player a good fit for the organization in terms of the phase and stage of their career that they're at? And I think that was the problem with Khalifa last year, is that, as you said, he would just come off a couple of really good seasons. He was eating up minutes. What he needed was a plug and play opportunity to go continue that and continue to build. And then he's sidelined for months. Then when he does come in, his performances suffer, and you just see how it was never, it might have been the type of center back the Whitecaps were looking for and needed. It might have been, you know, a good domestic player at a decent price. It hit all those boxes, but he wasn't at the right stage in his career for what the Whitecaps could offer him. Whereas I feel with Halbouni, that opportunity to get some seasoning at the next pro level, just build up his form and fitness and all that post-injury. And then a guy that's going to be hungry, eager for the opportunity to earn those first team minutes, it just feels like a much better fit. And then ultimately, if he's succeeding and he's banging on the door to be a starter at the MLS level, well, okay, then a year from now, you have a tough decision to make. Do you sell him on? Do you sell someone else on to make room for him? These are great problems to have, but it's not something that the Whitecaps are really going to have to worry about too much this year. I feel like if he just gets experience at the next pro level, makes his first team debut, puts in some solid performances, that year is a success, and then they can kind of go forward from there. So, like you said, I think that the situation just makes a lot more sense in this circumstance.
Yeah, and it's something where ultimately it's a win when you consider, like, you know, I don't know, I'll just throw a name out just because kind of a fun bit of news. Patrice Guisar, coach of the Halifax Wanderers, was just at Whitecaps training this week. Just sounds like Guisar, student of the game, was just kind of, you know, getting a chance to work with Vanny a bit, gets, you know, Wanderers starting preseason soon, getting some intel. But, you know, given that the history that Dan Nimick has with the Whitecaps, you could have wondered why the Whitecaps targeted Dan Nimick. But for him, he's in a situation where he needs to keep playing. He needs to get those minutes. He had a great season last year. Would have you know, could a Nimick arguably have more upside than a Halbouni? That's a discussion to be had. You know, you'd say so, maybe based on you know, potential, but also with Halbouni, the fact, like, yeah, like you mentioned, he can come in and. Because Halbouni has a lot of upside, at least pre-injury. He looked like he could genuinely. He got a Canada national team call for a camp poutine. Like he was like, it felt like as soon as he made a debut for either Magdeburg or Werder Bremen, he would have been on John Herdman's radar. He also has a lot of upside. It's important to remember pre-injury and even I think post-injury still maintains that upside at 24 for a center back. He may as well be 20 as a midfielder. I think it's something like, yeah, it just ticks a lot of those boxes. So yeah, I think it's overall good. It was a good trial, and that's the nice thing about trials. Sometimes you get a chance to try a player out, no risk, and he ends up paying off for the player, ends up paying off for the club. So congrats to Bilal Halbouni. It's a pretty cool story to think that few years ago. I think he was at Western University or something, playing for like FC London in League One Ontario, to now be playing in MLS. It's another cool League One as well story. The fact that he had his European journey as well in there. So congrats to him. And also on that note, congrats to Jeevan Badhwal. We've talked a lot about Jeevan, on this show recently. He's balling out for Canada's under 17s, balling out last year for the youth teams and getting a taste of next pro. Sounds like he was doing great in preseason this year. Well, all the hard work has been rewarded. He signed a Whitecaps FC2 deal, and I just want to say I loved it. I loved the news, mainly because, again, man, the importance of having a second team. It's so great that, again, someone like Badwell shows so much promise, and they can still give him such a huge opportunity like this, a chance to sign your first pro contract, be a pro player next year, knowing that instead of playing with U19s, he's going to be playing up against men, but you're not putting this pressure of, oh, you're 30th or whatever it is, 20 something X homegrown player, you get an MLS deal, you get all that pressure on you. I just love that he's able to slowly work him up the ladder like this. It reminds me a lot more of what we saw with Alphonso Davies back in the day, where it was, all right, you start with the U15s, you go up to U19s, you go to second team. Oh, then you get your sign to your first team deal. And I just love that we're seeing more progression like that with players. We saw with Ali Ahmed, we saw it with a few others, and it's just great to see Badwell get that, because we've mentioned it many a time. He was kind of the next up in the academy that deserved this opportunity, and hopefully he can ball out for the second team this year and then continue his rise towards what would hopefully see him become another local BC kid suiting up in the heart of midfield for the Whitecaps one day.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting just not that many, how many BC products have made their way into the MLS version of the Vancouver Whitecaps? Not many. So it's something to watch long term. I think for me, I mean, we talked about all already a couple weeks ago, and it sounds like he did really well over the course of that Spain camp. I think I'm just excited about the prospect of a Whitecaps FC2 next pro team that's a little bit more balanced this season. Hopefully that's going to happen. Obviously, we're going to have to see them, in match form to really figure that out. But it felt like at times last year, it was kind of the Coupland and Habibullah show. And if they didn't manage to go off, the team didn't really have a lot else going for it at times. Now, some of that was injury and different things that happened. And they kind of fell off, after a really good start. But this is just another piece to add to that team. I think you're going to get, a much more well-rounded squad that's not just reliant on a couple guys, and a good mix of, some older, no one on the next pro team is old, but some internationals, some guys with varied experience, and then some younger, unproven guys. And as we mentioned before with Badwell, he's, your box to box midfield type, kind of that, mature beyond his years, I think, both in terms of his on pitch performance and his off pitch demeanor, that I think will be very welcome in that team. And despite being still, very young for the next pro ranks, I think he'll be able to come in and, he had, what was it, like 400 minutes last year or something like that. It was pretty limited, but he has that little taste, and he's a mature guy, and his game is mature, and I think will suit the league well. So I expect, him to take a big step forward this season. And yeah, looking forward to some next pro games as well. I think it should be fun this year.
Yeah, it should be. And yeah, I just love the BC show, because as you mentioned, it's been rare. Of course, the Whitecaps and the Vancouverites will adopt people like Alphonso Davies, Sam Adekugbe, the Albertans, and Theo Bear, for example, from Ottawa, Thomas Hasall from Saskatoon. A lot of these guys, they'll all embrace them as, second Vancouverites, like basically BC kids, even if they're not from there. So it is cool to just have some BC kids, because of course, while it's a huge advantage that the Whitecaps were able to claim every part of the country that wasn't like the GTA in Quebec as part of these weird MLS rules, and it gives them a huge advantage, and it's given them a chance to get some fun players at the academy. And of course, there's a lot of fun Canadians they've had, like Ali Ahmed, for example, from Ontario. Again, he's one of those guys where he's basically been adopted as a BCer, it seems. Like they're using him and Sam Adekugbe on the what was it, the Vancouver the ads for Vancouver's World Cup campaigns, which we'll get to in a second. So shout out to that. But it is also cool to have some BC born guys on the Whitecaps, especially because there's all this talk of There needs to be more BC guys on the national team. The fact that it used to be such a important talent hub, and now it's just been over the last few years, it's been just Joel Waterman. Like, if you want more guys to join them, like the Cole Lines and some of the other options that are out in Europe. But it is nice to see a Badwall join the likes of what have been over the last few years. I think it's been Patrick Metcalf and it's been Michael Baldissimo, and that's been kind of about it for BC guys on the first team.
I was gonna say shout out to Baldy and Pat, because yeah, other than that, it's been few and far between. So that's why I think this is a big deal, right? In the long term, could you get someone who can contribute for years and years that is a hometown kid? That's just not been a thing in the MLS era of the Vancouver Whitecaps. So you'd like to get there at some point, and hopefully there's other kids coming down the pipe as well that can maybe push for something like that in the future.
Yeah, and it's also great that Badwall as well representing Surrey, because I think that's such a undervalued soccer market. Like, they love soccer in Surrey, a lot of talented players. So I think it'll be great to have a youngster from Surrey hopefully representing and getting a chance at the first team level, because that will also help a lot. I just think of that because on the NHL side, like, I think of Jujhar Khaira, such a random thing to think about. Jujhar Khaira, he's from Surrey. He made the NHL and it was huge because hockey is also, huge in Surrey. And to have some local kids make it up from sports there to the NHL was huge. And now, of course, hopefully on the soccer side, we can see Jeevan Bhadwal kind of carry the flag in that regard, because there's so much talent in Surrey, and I think it would be great for them to get a chance to have a hometown kid represent the local MLS team. So yeah, great story all around. Excited to see how he gets on this year. And hey, who knows? Maybe in 2026 he'll come off the bench in his hometown to play a World Cup game for the Canadian men's national team. And we say that because it is indeed, it's real, it's wild. I was thinking about this the other day. Someone pointed it out. Wild to think that like 2 years ago we were sitting here and Vancouver wasn't going to be a part of it. It was just, they said, nope, no capiche, no thank you. We don't want this. It's not worth our time, not worth our money. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, the bid was resurrected. They somehow slipped in the day they announced all the venues. And like, well, I think last year, they're like, oh, Vancouver's in with Toronto. And everyone's like, oh my goodness, it actually happened. But then even then, we're like, oh, maybe they're going to kind of get punished for coming in late. Maybe they're not going to get that many games. We found out this week the World Cup venue allocation and the schedule was announced. And it's great news for Vancouver. It says it was confirmed that seven men's World Cup games will be coming to the city. That's huge for context. I think it's one of the top cities in terms of total matches. They also got five group stage games, two of them being Canadian games, which is huge, that they'll get to host Canada twice in front of a sold-out BC place on grass, for those wondering. But the huge bonus, we expected five group stage games. That was the original allocation. There was going to be 10 games in Canada because it was an 80-game tournament, 10 in Canada, 10 in Mexico, 60 in the US. Of course, they changed the format rightfully from three-team groups to four-team groups, increasing the games significantly to over like 100. And that allowed more doors for other more games. And one of those perks means Canada, Vancouver got its originally promised five group games, but they got two bonuses. One round 32, one round of 16. And fun fact, if Canada were to win their group, that round of 32 game would be Canada's game. And if Canada were to win that next round of 32 game, that round of 16 game would also be there. So we could get up to four Canadian games all in Vancouver, all over a span from mid to late June of 2026 to early July. I think that is just absolutely phenomenal news because, yeah, I mean, we had the Women's World Cup here in 2015, one of my fondest memories. But yeah, it just feels special that, A, we're getting another World Cup. I thought after 2007, the U20 World Cup, and 2015, the Women's World Cup, I'm like, all right, that's about all we're going to get for World Cups in my lifetime. So to get another one in our hometown is so cool. And yeah, it was exciting just to see that become real.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't have much to add on that specific front. You covered it well. But I guess what my mind goes to immediately, not only having the World Cup in Vancouver, but having that quantity of games and some matches of real significance, some elimination round. is just the potential, at least, for impact it has to the wider soccer community and soccer infrastructure in Canada, right? You have the ability to create some real lasting moments that change the trajectory of the sport in this country for a long time, right? I mean, I think even you look at the development of the Canadian women's national team since 2015, right? I think that, you know, and just the notoriety of those people and the team and the kind of the whole, you know, the whole thing around it, I think having those events on home soil makes a real difference for people's understanding and familiarity with those teams, those people, those events, that stage. So, you know, I'm excited for the Canadian Premier League. I'm excited for League One around Canada. I'm excited for Project 8. I'm excited for Canadian MLS teams. All these things that I think are going to in some way benefit and sort of thrive if Canada is able to have a really successful World Cup experience. I think that's really exciting. In addition to the fact that, yes, you're going to get to see Canada, the men's national team, play twice at home in Vancouver and potentially up to four times. That's going to be special enough in its own right. But I think the knock-on effect it has, I always sort of draw back to, I guess this was in my formative years, so maybe it leaves a stronger mark, but the Winter Olympics had a massive, I think, impact on the visibility and notoriety of, you know, not something like hockey, which is obviously already huge, but things like skeleton and things like mogul skiing, stuff you wouldn't necessarily care about unless you were into that already, but it's at a world-class event. It's in your area. And all of a sudden it gains an importance and familiarity it didn't have previously. And so I really hope that that's something this World Cup can do, is create a new connection, a new sense of familiarity, and a memorable experience for a lot of people to hold on to for a long time. And hopefully it helps the development of soccer in Canada at a much wider level than just the great benefit of hosting a world-class event. But I think it can do a lot more than that.
Yeah, I love the 2010 show, because, yeah, you're right. Like, being in Vancouver for that, it was like, for a few months, like, John Montgomery was a hero. Like, Alex Bilodeau, Clara Hughes, like, you know, Marie-Philippe Poulin and Haley Wickenheiser. Like, everyone was talking about it. It was huge for just Canadian athletes as a whole. Like, Sidney Crosby scored the golden goal in the men's Olympic hockey, and it was huge for all that. And then even you'd think to 2015, it was huge for the women's team, because at that point it was kind of fresh off 2012. So everyone knew Christine Sinclair, she scored the hat trick against the U.S., yada, yada, yada. It's Sinclair. Well, I just remember that 2015 tournament, a young, like, 19-year-old, I think she was at the time, Kadisha Buchanan, ended up doing so well. She made the tournament team of the year, and I think even made the World 11 off the back of that. Like, that's wild. A Canadian World 11 performance, because at the time, I think I was one of the first World 11 performances, because then Alfonso Davies became the first man to do it. But I think Buchanan was historical on that front. Like, that I just think of the attention those sorts of moments can provide. All of a sudden, Buchanan was a household name. Fleming was a household name. Ashley Lawrence, like, all these players, Carmelita Moscato. So yeah, I'm just thinking as well, like, what it will do for the team itself, the men's team, to have this moment. We kind of got a taste of it in the 22 World Cup, where, you know, all people, like, starting to take attention of, oh, Atiba Hutchinson, like, this dude's a legend. He's four, you know, one of the oldest players in tournament history. It had such a great career, getting a chance to make his World Cup debut, like, learning about Eustachio, learning about, you know, of course people knew Davies, but, you know, even just learning a bit more what his, you know, his life like playing for Canada, etc. So yeah, it's exciting to see that. And I think, yeah, the huge part will be the grassroots impact, because, man, I can't imagine being like a six-year-old kid just getting that chance to have that tournament. Because, like, for me, I guess as a seven-year-old, I had the U20 World Cup, and even that was so cool to go watch Canada play in a U20 World Cup. And I'm like, damn, imagine that as, like, the actual, you know, like, the men's or women's World Cup. I can also imagine what it was like for a six-year-old in 2015, and I can only imagine what it would be for the six-year-olds in 2026. men or women to experience a tournament like this. So I'm super excited for that, like you mentioned, for just the inspiration it'll provide to be like, whoa, like Canada's competing against the world's best, hosting the world's best. And hopefully I'm excited as well for just like all the culture it'll bring. Like I'm excited for the Moroccan fans to travel. I'm excited for the Brazilian fans. I'm excited for the Japanese fans, excited for the Germans. They're always fun at these tournaments. The French, like you can just name it across the board. Like they're so I'm also excited for all those things to come together, because I think that's what will really make people fall in love with the game. Because I remember like the 2006 World Cup, just like being enthralled of going to Commercial Drive and watching how hard the Portuguese and the Italians and the French partied when their respective teams won, and how big of a deal they're parading the streets and everything like that. Like that's just going to be so wild to have that times 100, because the games are happening in our country and people are getting behind their teams. Like, God, I hope Canada ends up playing like a team with that level of fan base. Like, there's a lot of for some there's a lot of Italian roots in Vancouver. Screw it, give me a Canada Italia game in Vancouver. Like, imagine how wild that would be. Like, I want to see that. That energy, that I think that would really last, be a lasting memory for a lot of kids going forward, and adults like ourselves as well. So yeah, I'm looking forward to all of it.
I think that's the thing too, is when Vancouver did kind of get their hat in the ring right at the end there. The reason they're gonna host seven games now is because this is ultimately it's a very attractive international destination. It's also an incredibly multicultural international city. So in that sense, it fits the World Cup motif, I think, very well, right? You have that melting pot of different groups, people with different backgrounds. And so to invite all those people in and yeah, just have a big, football party for a month or two is going to be fantastic. So yeah, I think, good for the culture at the grassroots level and good for the culture for the experience that everyone's going to get to have for those couple of months that the World Cup is going on and going on in Vancouver. So, feels a long way off at the moment, but it'll just like the Vancouver Whitecaps season, it will sneak up sooner than we think. So, yeah, looking forward to that as well as what's upcoming here, on the domestic league and cup side for the Vancouver Whitecaps, but also as we, inch closer to CPL League One BC seasons, all that good stuff. I mean, any final World Cup thoughts? Podcast thoughts here, Alex, before we sign off.
It's 2.5 years away. Like, it's soon. Like, next year, that means, yeah, next year they'll probably be they'll start to get the first qualified teams. The year after, we'll have the draw. Apparently it could be in Vancouver, which would be so cool. I want to go to a World Cup draw. Probably be a lot better in person than these terrible made for TV productions they think that they are. So maybe look forward to that. But I'm just excited for all of it, especially. Yeah, just excited to really soak it all in, because when 2015 came around, kind of just happened. Like, it was just so quick, and that's probably because I was younger. I wasn't really working, being as involved, following it even. But I just got wrapped up in it all, so I'm kind of excited to follow a bit of the hype from the start this time, because I'm more invested in many different factors than before. So I think that will all be very cool. But until then, we have lots of other soccer that will get us there in the meantime, starting with Whitecaps Tigres this week. I can't wait to get out to that one for my first live match. So again, you can find me on Twitter and on our Twitter at Alex Gangiruzic, on Threads, Instagram at AJR in the case. And hey, if you do have Footbology, I'm gonna double down on that plug. Follow me. I think just put Alex Gangiruzic pop up. I'll follow all y'all back, and we'll have a good time on Footbology for those who use that app. Such a sick app. I'm not even getting paid to say this. I just think it's it'd be lit to build more of a community on there. So if you do have that app, that's my random plug of today.
I like it. I would encourage everyone to do that. I'll have to, Well, sometimes life gets in the way, but if I could get to even, half or a quarter of the matches you're able to make it out to, you're truly in an elite category in that sense. So, I'll just aim for the treetops and see where I can get. You can find me, as always, at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter. You can find all of our stuff at thirdsub.ca. Match previews out now if you want kind of more chatter, similar to what we talked about on the podcast. And then we'll have post-match report card, all that good stuff in the coming days and weeks. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Shout out to you if you're over on the island or headed out to the island at the moment. And we'll chat again soon.